podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Mo Stewart, with Sean O'Donnell and with Stu Wright to talk about Liverpool going to Brighton and winning by 2-0. Also to talk, obviously, about Mo Salah and to talk about Arsenal away, an absolutely packed show. Thank you very much if you came to the live show in Brighton on Friday night. A lot of fun was had by all. First one of them we've done in 2 years, and we're doing three more of them in Ireland coming up, in Belfast, in Cork and in Dublin. International weekend for that one, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Check it all out on the Anfield Wrap social. Also download the app for everything you need as Liverpool go game by game by game by game in what is shaping up to be an absolutely phenomenal season. And that comes out, I think, in the manager's post-match. Stu, I'm not saying he feels as though this is one that Liverpool got away with, because that just wouldn't be true. Liverpool were much the better side, but he was interested as to how he articulated the idea that he likes watching Brighton, but I don't like playing them, he said. And I think that there's a lot of mutual respect in the game early, but I think Jurgen Klopp will have had his eye on this one as one where maybe, just maybe, things could go wrong, and Liverpool made sure they very much didn't.
He's clearly a really good manager, Potter, isn't he? And it'd be fascinating to see what he could do with maybe a bigger club, no disrespect to Brighton, with more money in the bank, because, you know, they've got a clear set way of playing. It's very intelligent. It's very hard to break through. They cause the opposition problems, but where it breaks down time and time again for them, I think, is that quality in the final third. And eventually, and we see at the moment that they're in a bit of a slump. Is it 4 or 5 games now without a win? And I think eventually, for teams like that, no matter how good the build-up play is, there will come a time where there's a knock-on impact of confidence that radiates through the rest of the team when the front lads aren't putting the ball in the back of the net. And I think that's where they are at the moment, but that's no slight on Potter. And I can completely understand why Klopp doesn't relish these games. I think we all saw how Brighton started the game. They were snapping into us. They were, you know, great pressure on the ball, and they caused us a few problems. But ultimately, without that being able to capitalise in the final third, that soon dissipated once Liverpool started to strangle the game. And I do think that Liverpool did largely strangle that game.
It's striking to me, Sean, just having gone through the numbers this morning for some of the stats work we do. They had a shot on the 8th minute. Their next shot is the one immediately after half-time with Trossard, where it looks like Morpay handles it in the build-up. Then the next shot is in about the 86th minute. From 10 to 85, Liverpool make sure the game belongs to them, and obviously the goal's important in that.
Yeah, they do, and it's the classic, you know, a goal changes a game. I mean, maybe not so much yesterday, but I felt like the goal really did change it for us, and it changed it for them, because I thought you saw them sort of slipping back into the shell a little bit. I thought they started really well. They were really bright. I was a bit worried, to be honest, at the start, because I thought we looked like we'd played the amount of games that we have played in the last few weeks. But I think, you know, credit to us and credit to Klopp, the way he sort of set them up to really come out and strangle the game, as Stu says, because you think about, you know, the midfield, you know, Naby, we'll come on to talk about how good he was yesterday. But, you know, brave shouts, just brave shout going with him, I think, and not going with Thiago yesterday, because I think it was the type of game where Thiago might have, you know, being on the ball and having the ball a bit more when you're going to be pressed is not the worst thing in the world. So, you know, fair play to the way we come out, and, you know, after the goal, I thought we were brilliant.
It's about as consummate as a nil two you can get, Mo, and nil, you know, it's reminiscent of a Benitez or Mourinho sort of 2-0 away whilst they were going for titles, thinking back sort of 15 years or so ago, where you get your goal, you ensure that not a great deal else happens if you need to, and then at some point you will get your opportunity to get your second. And it often comes in that patch, doesn't it, between 50 and 65, 50 and 70, and then all of a sudden the opposition are looking at each other like, oh, this is set in the stars, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, it's almost like the perfect time to score is just like between 15 and 20 minutes into a half, and we did it in both halves. And that was the perfect time to, like you say, start making Brighton think about, okay, well, this game is going to start slipping away from us. But from our perspective, it didn't allow us to start feeling like, okay, we're not capitalising on this good period of play from us, because the first real chance we had, we scored it. And then in the second half, it was a bit bitty to begin with. And then we had that wave where it was 1-2-3. And then immediately after Salah hits the post, we get the penalty. And then that's it. Okay, we've done it now. And from there, we're able to click into that containment mode, which we are looking really good at. And the thing that's pleasing me, we're looking good at it with a variety of cast of characters in the team. Everybody knows that game now and can perform it. And so it was a lot more comfortable. Like, I was looking at some stats as well. I was surprised Brighton actually had more of the ball. And when you think about the way we normally control the ball in games. And I think they even said in commentary, it was hard for Brighton to get rhythm because we've always got the ball. But we didn't really need the ball to control them. We just controlled the space so well. And again, that's testament to everybody knowing their place and knowing their role.
You talk about them knowing that, controlling the space and controlling the game by controlling the space. I think a big part of that, Mo, is, he was excellent yesterday, is the out-ball threat of Diaz. Mm. That ultimately, Brighton know that you look at that three, all three of them, but we'll start focusing on Diaz. Brighton can't go where they'd like to go. They can't all go where they want to go because there's always going to be that threat in behind. Mm-hmm. And as they're trying to do more of that as the game wears on in that second half period, especially, yeah, more and more Diaz is just able to firstly work really hard, be part of the team unit, but then as soon as there's the opportunity, position himself and threaten Brighton.
He's alive to that. I mean, I don't know whether or not that's the one thing that they've drilled into him on the training ground more than anything else, as in be alive in counter-attack situations, but he has always been there ready to, and not just to be in position to collect the ball, but able to collect the ball. Sometimes they've played like long 40-yard passes to his chest. He's controlled it instantly and then carried the ball and then found a red shirt again. I mean, this is the second Premier League game in a row where my favourite moment was a Diaz run from his own half to the second half. And the thing that I love the most about both of them is they both produce a shot for Liverpool. And that's as important as the run itself, because when you're a defender, if you think you've got a guy who just runs down blind alleys, you're going to cover him, but you're going to think, okay, I can still cheat a little bit because chances are by the time we get there, he's going to get flustered. This guy is there and he's doing the right thing time and time again. So the opposition can't really, they can't afford to leave him open. But then if they do block him, there's those two other guys.
He's constantly available, Sean. That was the thing I could see in the ground yesterday. He feels, obviously, he's deeper than Salah. Salah tends to be Liverpool's player that's the furthest forward. He also feels in patches deeper than when Mane's played that position recently as well, in that he constantly wants to come and get on the ball. But then he has got that threat of spinning and running away as well at any given moment. I think he looks to me like he would be a nightmare, an absolute nightmare to play against if you're the right back.
Yeah, he does. He's a reminder of, in life, really. If you ever think you can't improve on something, you always can. Because I think, you know, looking at when we had, you know, the front three and Jota, you think this is like the best attacking, you know, team in Europe. And then all of a sudden we had Diaz, and we look like a level above that. It's crazy. I think a lot of the, you know, the deepness is to do with his pace and the way he carries the ball. I can't believe how much the ball just sticks to him when he's running at pace. You know, touched on Jota there. That's one of his main strengths, but Diaz looks like he can do it and some. I think the way you know, he tracks back, I think Klopp had a go at him early in the first half about him not tracking back when he lost the ball. He was right by him, and after that he was always the one furthest back, tracking back, winning the ball back, getting the ball going again. I think it's just really exciting, and I can't wait to see how it all develops.
He's brilliant for the goal. It should be a red, Stu, but you know, I actually think the video assistant referee stitched the referee a little bit there, where it's one where he should be telling him, you need to look at this angle from behind the goal on the monitor here. You know, I really do think the responsibility for that one is on the video assistant referee. But he's brilliant for it, and he switched on, he makes that run. Constantly in the game, I think he's switched on, he's looking to bring people into play, and that to me is the most exciting part. He's able to carry the ball at unbelievable pace. It sticks to him, as Sean says, and I think in part because of his technique, it means his head's up, he knows where everyone is.
Yeah, he's amazing for the goal. I mean, he's arriving there in the centre forward position, which is just testament to his constant movement. By the way, we can't talk about the goal without talking about Joel Matip, who is turning into Kevin De Bruyne. He's unbelievable, Joel Matip. All this talk, I listened to yourself on the post-match yesterday talking about Van Dijk and how he is so far and above everybody else in world football. And that may well be true, but to me, the second player on that list is Joel Matip, and I think he is closing that gap with the way he plays. It's been revolutionary. It's had me thinking about Liverpool's structure. I know I'm digressing a little bit from the Diaz thing, but so just bear with me. But I remember when, do you remember back in the day when Sven was England manager and there was this toying of David Beckham playing in the quarterback position in the midfield? Liverpool have quarterbacks, but they don't play in the midfield. Liverpool's quarterbacks play in the defence. If they want a big switch to the left, a long switch to the left, it's coming from Van Dijk. If they want a big switch... Sorry, a big switch to the right is coming from Van Dijk. If they want a big switch to the left, it's coming from Trent. If they want to run the attack, it's going through Joel. I mean, the options are... And if they want to pass it, it's going through Fabinho. The options from that back line, from an attacking point of view, is ridiculous. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. And when Joel makes that run, the opposition, it does break any kind of plans that they have, because that's not part of their defensive plan to cope with this fella running with the ball. What a player. But, you know, for Diaz, I'm in serious danger of hitting complete fanboy territory at this stage. He is unbelievable. And the thing is about him as well, I'm sorry, Neil, I'm really tired of talking about incompetence around people like Stuart Atwell and the way VAR is done. So I'm trying to swerve it a little bit. But when I look at Diaz, I think at this point, we've only had him a couple of months, but he looks like he can do everything. So what's your move if you're the fullback? You show him on the outside? Well, he's going to skin you on the outside and whip the ball in. Show him on the inside? Well, he's made up with that because he'll be through on goal. He can head the ball sticks to him. As you said, Sean, no matter where it comes from, it sticks to him. He is a terrifying prospect. And I find it really funny that the news out of Colombia this week is that Asprilla said that that he's playing within himself because he's riddled by fear and anxiety of playing for Liverpool. And if that is the case, we have got some player on our hands there. Yeah, so brilliant for the goal, just a brilliant all-round player, and it could well be the spark that provides the final kick for this season.
Just, I want to come back to it's this idea of the outlet for me. So it's obviously, yesterday, it is obviously a stark comparison between him and Lamptey in terms of an aerial ball. I mean, Lamptey is amongst the smaller fullbacks in the country by some distance. I'm always surprised whenever I actually watch Lamptey play in person, because I'm like, you can't be an actual footballer. But he is one, and he is, you know, he's got terrifying pace, unbelievable technique. I think he looks a bit short of confidence, to be honest, at the minute, Lamptey. He doesn't look quite like the player he did a few months back, and that's a bit of a shame for him. That said, Stu, what it meant was there yesterday, any way you want to get it to him, you can get it to him. And especially with Henderson and Van Dijk, love hitting him from any angle. You want to get it to him on his chest, he fancies himself, he's going to win it. You want to, if you go, you need to go a little bit higher, he's going to try and flick a header into someone. You put it anywhere where he can try and get it under control with his feet, he's more than happy to do that. Put his body in the way. You know, for me, that is part of why he could be so important for this Liverpool side. Is, I think, more so than Jota, and more so than Mane has been across the course of this season. He's just a constant outlet in that area of the pitch.
Yeah, I think he's potentially a different level than the two players you've described. When we're talking about Sadio Mane and what he's achieved for this club, that's some statement. You know, if that comes anywhere near to being true. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to pick any faults in this game at this point. You know, he seems as tough as old boots. You know, he can hold it up. He goes wandering with the ball. He brings others into play. I mean, even the one near the end where Klopp seemed to have a go at him, telling him to pass. He tried to put Jota in.
Yeah, he was. He?
Yeah.
But Klopp obviously just couldn't see that from the angle. And I think, you know,
he could possibly have done it a stride earlier as well. If you want to be really forensic, like a real bell end, you could possibly have done it a stride earlier. And their keeper does brilliantly for it, by the way. He anticipates he's going there and he sweeps it.
I think we're at that point, though, with him, where any kind of critique, and I include myself in this, it's pure bell endry to find the critique. You know what I mean? It is pure.
You've got to work hard.
You know, we are having to work hard to do it, and we're aspiring to perfection from him, because that's the levels, you know, he's come close to as he's hit the ground running. So I'm so excited to see what he does next season. Really am.
Mentioned there about the idea of Mo Mane as an outlet and hitting Mane, and that maybe it's not been quite as we'd like this season on the left hand side. I think he looks astoundingly good through the middle. I think he looks like an outlet all the time, and that means you're playing against three of them. If he picks all three, with Diaz, with Salah, again, a different type of player, a different type of threat, but someone who needs to be constantly defended. And now Mane in the middle. I think every single game we've seen him there, I think he's got better at the nuts and bolts of it. And to me, that if I was an opposition sort of player, that'd be what would be concerning me. He's working this out and he's improving as he's going, and then he's got everything else.
And you can see it in real time. Like, yesterday he was doing the Bobby bits, and I was so pleased because it's like, he's taken to this new role. It's not like we don't know how he feels about it, whether he wants it to stay out there or whether he knows that this is a better chance for him in the team. He sees what Luis Diaz is doing. He sees the way that everyone's kind of gravitating towards him. But he hasn't kind of looked like he's not happy with it. He's kind of taken on the challenge. He's growing in it. And I do think there are certain parts of this role that we kind of take for granted. Like, just a simple thing, like you say, of holding up the ball. When he's playing on the left, he's got the touchline to help him. He's only really got to look in one direction when he's working out who's going to potentially come for him on the ball. When he's in the middle, he's got to be on both shoulders all the time. He's got so many defenders moving in front of him, so many attackers moving around him. He's got to work out how he's going to pass this to someone, the weight of the pass, where he's going to direct them to, and then where his next run's going. And that's a lot to take in at any split second that the ball might be coming towards him. But he is working it out. And the beauty of it is that while he's working it out, he's been scoring goals. So his confidence has always been high. He's never felt like, oh, bloody hell, I'm never going to get this. He's still like, you know, okay, every game I feel closer, every game I feel closer. And so it does kind of present an issue in terms of the rest of the season, is that are we going to see him more in the middle now? Or is this just an issue where we had Jota and Bobby out? But if Jota and Bobby are both full fitness, do we still see that Mane playing more when it's
I thought it was interesting, since it looked like a bit of a 50-50 split between him and Jota as to who was left and who was central. I actually would prefer... I always love when we say, when everyone says, well, the trick here is movement and interchanging. I feel as though when it's all brilliant, that's the trick. When you've got to go through tough periods in games, actually, yeah. I think everyone just knowing what their job is no bad thing. So
no, I agree. And so now he's logged enough time to really say he does know his job in this now. But then, for example, say for Arsenal, say if Jota's now fighting fit, and Jota plays very well against Arsenal, they don't like playing against him. Do you give him a break? Do you think, okay, you've done well in this? Is he happy with that? Or do you say, okay, you can go back to left, but then it's Diaz? So, again, positive problems for the manager, but I do think he's given him a bit of another lease of life to have this extra role.
Well, I like the idea, Sean, of maybe Mane being... You know, when Salah's unavailable, goes off injured there, that Mane can go and pull right. I think it's fine in theory. I actually thought we were just a little bit poorer after that happened. I think there's an element of managing the game out because it's 2-0 at that point. But I did feel as though, you know, we lacked a little thing through the middle of the pitch when Jota went central and Mane went right.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think just on Mane central, I think it looks, again, that like the Diaz thing, it looks really exciting for the future, because I think that could be somewhere where he finds himself playing for the rest of his career at Liverpool and being really good at it as well. I think it's a testament to the squad and the competition within the squad that he's doing as well as he is, because I think like a lot of times with this team and this squad and this management, a lot of things happen because of injuries. So, you know, you touched on it there. Mane's gone central. You know, a large reason has been because Jota and Firmino have both been out, and it's sort of been a victim of circumstance with that. But actually, he's got himself there. Diaz is on the wing, performing as he is. And Mane's thinking, I better perform where I'm playing here if I want to stay in this team. And I think that knowing that he's got Firmino and Jota coming back, breathing down his neck there, obviously desperate to play, I think that's just helped him and pushed his game on even more, because he is learning on the job. But I thought yesterday was the best we've seen him down the middle, yeah. And it's clear to see. And I just think, you know, knowing the type of character that Mane is, knowing the way he sort of applies himself in this team and wants to keep his space no matter what, because we talk about him having a dip this season, you know. He's arguably one of his best seasons for Liverpool, and he's had the dip. So I think for me, Mane down the middle is really exciting.
It's a new lease of life. I wonder, Stuart, a change can be as good as a rest, and I think he was more odd than anything else off the left at times this season. More sort of, I think, just finding bits of it a little bit difficult. I think also at some sort of point, sides have played against you enough. They've got enough data to maybe know a trick or two. He looks to me like he's flourishing. I mean, Mo was asking the question as to whether or not he's enjoying it. He comes across to me as though he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does look like he is. He looks really, really content and happy with himself at the moment, I think. And I think AFCON, as well as experience today, will no doubt have a part to play in that. It's given him a boost. But when you look at it, I mean, I messaged you, didn't I, after the game, Neil, just to say that actually one of the most exciting things I thought about the game was Sadio Mane's performance. Just that, you know, we're seeing that evolution. Mm. We're seeing him laying on the job, as you've just said, Sean, and it was definitely, for me anyway, yeah. And yourself, it was the best I've seen him play in that position. I think there will be times where Sadio Mane has thinkers in that position as well. I think, you know, that will happen, but what we can see now is a growing understanding of the role. And when you look at it on paper as well, there's no reason why he couldn't absolutely flourish in that role, because what you were saying before, Mo, whereas usually he's tucked up against the left touchline. Well, now he's got the options, and if anyone knows how to play the options on both sides, it's Sadio Mane, because he's played on the right,
he's
played on the left, he's played as a centre forward, he's strong as well, and he can hold it up. And I think the last thing that a central defender who's marking him wants, and this is the difference between him and Firmino, the last thing that they want him to do his turn. Yeah. Because if he turns, he's through. And he's either through on goal or he's through at the other centre-half. And, you know, I think that other centre-half will be quaking in the boots if Sadio Mane's running at them 20 yards from goal. So I think he gives us a very, very different option. For me, this could well be the changing of the guard of the centre-forward position, because, like you, Sean, I can see him being the number nine now. Yeah. I can see him being actually the first one on the team sheet for the number nine position, really, because when Jota plays there, listen, you pay your money, you take your choice on what you want out of a centre-forward. Jota scores more goals than Firmino, and at the moment, I think just more than Mane. And there has been, he does pose a different threat. But I do think when you've got a team with wide forwards, as we have, who play so high and are proper goal-scoring threats, then there has to be someone in the front three who provides that link to the midfield. There has to be someone. And we've lost that when Jota plays, you know. And I think, you know, it's why some of us cry out for Firmino when Jota's played at times and it's not worked. But Sadio could well be the perfect in-between. He could be the perfect hybrid. And I'm really excited. So many of the top players in world football, and we only have to look at one down the East Lancs, you know, they've changed their positions. They've evolved as players as they've got older. Ronaldo started as a winger. He's now, you know, scored 800-odd goals, you know, as a centre-forward, and that's the way he's seen. I think Sadio Mane offers a lot more to the team. He's a lot younger still than Ronaldo, but it's really, really exciting to see this stage of his development.
The midfield, a part of them closing the game out, Sean, Keita has already been mentioned here, and it was another excellent performance from him, you know, to the point that the sub, it looked like he had a minor little problem with his hand, but you'd also hope in part it was about them trying to keep him as fit and fresh as possible, because I think the main thing here is that it's a great moment for him to get a run of fitness, first and foremost, for him to be available. I'd like to see him start against Arsenal, but, you know, if the manager doesn't choose him, he'll have his reasons, and at the minute the manager's managing his squad really, really well, but I just think at the minute, any team sheet with him on, you're able to go, yep, this will be absolutely fine. Nabby knows what he's doing.
Yep, I agree. I think the one thing that's always been an issue for him has been getting injuries at the wrong time. And just when you look like you think, wow, we've got a player on our hands, this is the player that we signed, as everyone always goes on about, when he plays a couple of good games and then he gets injured. I think now you're looking to see where he's had a decent run, a proper season as well, where he's had, you know, he hasn't been completely inconsistently, but he's been a lot more consistently than he has previously. And you're starting to see the reasons, again, the cliche, this is why we signed him and all that, but you are really starting to see how he fits in and how he plays. And I think the role that he's got now is a lot better suited to him. I think he's had to play a few different roles in that midfield, and I think that where he finds himself now, he's always got, you know, a solid two behind him, whether it be Henderson, Fabinho, or Fabinho and Thiago. And I think it just bodes well for the run of games that's coming. I'd be happy to see him start against Arsenal, to be honest. I think the one thing that it does give you when you've got a fit and fire and Naby is options, and I think that's no bad thing at this part of the season. Definitely,
it's marked to me, Mo, that he's enjoyed the run. I think it's fair to say, and I think he's got a real sense, possibly for the first time properly. It's important not to gloss over his significance in 2018-19. I think that there's a few players who are a bit left field, who are different phases of that campaign, turn up and bob up. You know, I always think everyone forgets the autumn of Dejan Lovren, for instance, in 1920. You know, in this little run from 2018, but in this little run, there's some players get more of a run than we sort of our memory lets us remember. For me, the thing about Keita here is he's been on the pitch for so much that's been good for Liverpool this season, and I think that's the most important thing. A lot of goodness has had Naby Keita playing in the heart of the Liverpool midfield.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I think I saw a stat on Twitter that says that his points, yeah, it's 2.69 points per game, and that's over the course of his whole Liverpool career. So that's pretty much winning every time he's playing. And even when you take into consideration the stop-start nature of the earlier parts of his career, that proves that when we have had him, he has been effective. And I think there was a period of time where he was in and out, and the injuries meant that it was hard for him to say, okay, this is my place in this team, this is my place in the pecking order, so to speak. I think now, having this longer period of time where he's in and around the squad, where he's coming in and he's actually contributing to games in the way he has, that's kind of been dissipated. And so he's more confident in himself. He's able to adapt what he does, because I remember when he first bought him from Leipzig, the problem was, to a certain extent, was that the highlights reels showed him doing everything. And that's because Leipzig's system allowed him to do everything, allowed him to be here, there, and everywhere, just cleaning up everyone else's mess, dribbling through defenders and putting people
in. I think it was a mix of Kante and Iniesta.
Exactly. And because he has the ability to do all of those things. But obviously, in our team, those things have to occur within the structure at the right times. And he was never really able to kind of reconcile all of that. Now it looks like he can. Now, when it's a time when we need to be a bit of solidity, he can do the solid job, he can do the genie job. When we need to have a little bit more creativity, we may be bogged down in the game, he can start taking players on, he can start looking for those little pockets and feeding players in. And everyone else knows what he wants to do now. So I think that's a little bit better as well. But we have to remember, Naby, we came into the season, it was like, oh, it's a big season for Naby Keita. Big season for him. He has to decide if he's going to earn his new contract. I think that question's been answered.
100 games. I mean, that's snuck up, hasn't it? It's been a strange Liverpool career. Yeah. But I think I said that on a show not so long ago. Whenever Naby plays, I think to get the best out of him, I think you have to pay him two from three of Thiago, Henderson, and Fabinho. Mm-hmm. There's got to be, for me, he plays his best football when he's got that kind of that buffer behind him, and I think it gives him the license and the confidence to go and express himself. But what's been really interesting over the last few weeks as well is he's been doing a more simplified job, hasn't he? He's just been doing, there's been less onus on him to create. Mm-hmm. That might be partly in the addition of Diaz down that side as well.
And possibly Manny through the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Stuart, just on him in general, mentioning there the idea of the game against Arsenal, I think one of the shifts that I think's happened over the course of the campaign, and I think you're alluding to it to a degree, is I feel the points average thing has in part been because I think in the past the manager's picked his games for him a little bit. He's been more likely to be on the pitch when Liverpool feel as though they're going to have even more of the ball. At the minute, it feels as though he'll be trusted and should be trusted, I hasten to add, in every single circumstance. You know, at the minute, that's where he is for me at the minute. I worry that Henderson's got a lot of football in his legs so far over the course of this season by the normal sort of standards of Henderson. I think he's our joint highest appearance holder for outfield. I think I'm right in saying in the league over the course of the campaign. You know, you end up sort of with Henderson if you're not careful. You don't want to lose him. You maybe need to manage him a little bit. And I also think it's a good message to the rest of the squad. I think Henderson's been excellent since he was benched in the San Siro, don't get me wrong. But I think I think seeing that everyone has to take their turn is no bad lesson for this Liverpool squad at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't matter if you have the armband or not. It doesn't matter how much you earn or not. You know, I think that equality across the squad in terms of hierarchy is really fundamental to the way the culture that they have at the club. And I think if there's any threat to that, it should be addressed fairly swiftly. And that's potentially moving on to other things. But, in terms of Wednesday, if Liverpool's midfield consisted of Thiago, Fabinho and Keita, and we had Henderson on the bench, I've got no problem with that. I think to me, it's actually a toss of a coin between Thiago and Henderson for that right-sided midfield berth, really, for Wednesday. And I think either one has its pros. I think it could be swung either way. But I think Thiago's had sufficient rest now. He's been in now for a couple of games, hasn't he? And I think going away from home to Arsenal, it's really, really tough, really important game, possibly the most important game in world football on Wednesday night. I think having a play with his nous and control, will be really key.
Okay, just quick on that, sorry. Henderson hasn't made the most league appearances. Van Dijk, Becker and Salah have all got 26, but Henderson has made the most appearances so far this season, all competitions, with 39. Nearest to him is Jota with 37, and then Van Dijk with 36. Touch on the centre-back just very quickly. Matter for the goal got mentioned, Sean. Virgil's just amazing at everything. There was the little flick header back yesterday that I literally went to bed thinking about. Just the goalkeeper, when a slightly wicked cross comes in and Virgil just angles it, guides it safely into his goalkeeper's hands. You wouldn't even think to do it, and there he is. He is... Every game he just does something that's breathtaking.
Yeah, I don't think he's real, you know. I don't think he's real. He's just the recovery from the injury has been spoken about a little bit, but I don't think, you know, it can be underplayed how impressive he's been. Because start the season, he's feeling himself back in, which is fair enough. You know, you allow anyone with an injury like that to feel himself back in. But because, you know, we spoke about minutes played and appearances and stuff, you know, there is that sort of, it doesn't matter if you've got the armband, doesn't matter who you are, you know, we can chop and change it unless you're Van Dijk. because I think that Van Dijk, you know, he plays every game, he has to play every game, and he gives you the option to rotate the other centre-back because you're playing with Van Dijk, so you're always going to look that good. I think he's just absolutely unbelievable, to be honest, and I think he's getting better, if that's even possible. You know, every game as we're playing at the moment, you know, his leadership quality, even looking at interviews that he's doing with other players in the team, you know, everything about him is just like,
I reckon that video should be winning a BAFTA. Sort that out, could just get a BAFTA, please? Oh, it doesn't get better.
It's really funny what you said earlier, Stu, about Joel being the quarterback, because I thought, oh, did he read my piece where I said Virgil was the quarterback? It was like, no, he clearly didn't. The thing about that is that we have the best attacking defense that I've potentially ever seen, like, and all five of them have their own unique elements to it. I mean, obviously we know all about Trent and his delivery, but his central stuff. Robertson was doing the central stuff as well yesterday, I noticed. Like, there was one moment where we were on the counter-attack and our central midfield...
He just went number nine?
Yeah. Like, well, our central midfield three was Trent, Robertson and Diaz. And they had Salah and Mane ahead of them. And I was just looking at it. And the thing about it was, it wasn't just the fact that he just happened to find himself there. Is that he did an overlapping run from fullback through inside, straight through the middle. And he at no point thought, oh, maybe I should look and make sure there's someone behind me. Because he knew there was.
And that's our most orthodox defender.
Exactly. And the Virgil thing, like, part of the thing I wrote in the piece is the way that he kind of sets the table for our attack. Because when he's passing it around in the back, he doesn't just pass it to one guy, pass it to the other guy. He basically, he looks towards Trent as if he's going to pass to Trent, and then he passes it sideways, and he's watching the opponents to see what they would have done if he'd made that pass, and then he's calling out to everybody else. He basically is doing the quarterback job where he's reading a defense and like running decoy runners everywhere. And it happens a lot in the first 15-20 minutes of a game where we're feeling out how they're trying to defend us, and then from there we can kind of set the table of how we can best counteract it. But that's why I think it's so important that he plays every game, because that role is really hard to replicate. And I think that when we have so many good defenders as we do, like you say, Sean, we are in a ability where we can rotate the others, which, by the way, is the other reason why I think Joel Matip's been so good, is because we haven't had to have him on the pitch. Yeah. At times, we have been able to keep him fresh. So we are at the point where we've got an embarrassment of riches, and we've literally not even talked about Joe Gomez yet. So I think in terms of a defensive structure, it allows us to be so more confident, because when you watch Fabinho, for example, sometimes you think, wow, he's really aggressive on the front foot. He's like winning the ball like 20 yards beyond the center circle, the opponent. And you're thinking, wow, our defensive midfielder, how is he doing that? It's because he's got Van Dijk behind him. And even if he's out of position, he's like, okay, well, he'll catch him up. And he normally does.
He normally does, indeed. Strength and depth is unbelievable. I mean, you can reflect on who's not on the bench yesterday, Sean, before you'd even look on the bench. Just quick, I think that Liverpool, you know, given the competitions that we're in now, obviously that's great news. But also just given the start of next season, I don't think people have entirely got their head around it yet, that with the World Cup taking out the time out of the season it takes in November and December, I sort of worked it out that from the first week of September, with only one international break up until when that World Cup starts, Liverpool will be playing a league or a Champions League game every week. To contextualise that, the third round of the League Cup is down to be the 9th of November, i.e. the last bit before the World Cup starts. So there's not even a break where there's a League Cup game and you can therefore play some young players. You know, this is, if ever there's a time to have a lot of quality footballers, it is right now.
Yeah, I hadn't realised that about the World Cup, to be honest. I think it's a good point. One thing that's been in the back of my mind as we've sort of clicked into gear, if you like, since the turn of the year, has been the year before, 13-14, when we signed Coutinho and Sturridge in January, and we build that momentum up for that back end of the season. Even though we weren't in the race for anything then, or the hunt for anything then, it really set us up for the following season. And I'd like to think the strength that we've got now, doing the rotation now, getting everyone to be, you know, there's no new signings that you're waiting to bed in, you can just run straight into next season and be, you know, quality week in, week out.
I think it's this then throws us onto the Salah contract question, Stu, in that for me there's more than enough games for everyone at the moment. I wouldn't be eager, whether Salah signs a contract or not, to be quite frank with you, but I wouldn't be eager to see anyone move on in the summer before you've had a proper look at what you think next season looks like, because as I say, it's going to be intense for the Champions League teams. It could be a mad year where someone who's not a Champions League team can take a real run at it, I think, because if you've got a week between games, you're going to see the wear and tear, I think, on the Champions League teams. But we don't want that to be Liverpool. And it was interesting. I thought the manager was deliberately philosophical. Then you've got Salah's agents putting himself centrally in amongst all of this. I'd like Liverpool to be getting that situation sorted out, not least because I do think it could become a little bit of a distraction for one or two if they're not careful. But the flip side of this is that obviously it's a lot of money and his contract is up and he'll be 31 the day his contract's up.
Yeah, I've been back and forth on this. I think it's pretty nuanced in the sense of there's two parts really to the question you're asking really, and it's, you know, first of all, do you want Liverpool to give Salah a contract no matter what on the terms that he wants, and if not, when are you going to let him go? Are you going to sell him, or are you going to let him run out his contract for the following year? And for me, I've found myself more and more. And particularly, it's been sharpened since the emojis from his agent. Not even his agent, is he? He's a solicitor, but, you know, he is the de facto agent, I suppose. And I think I'm now in a position where there's no one bigger than the club. As much as I'd like Mo Salah to stay, and I hope he does, I hope he spends the rest of his career there, I hope he becomes, you know, ambassador for the club in the future, I hope he's there and is a permanent part of the furniture. But ultimately, I don't want the club blackmailed. And you only have to look around. World football now are club ownership at the very elite top level. Who's doing well? Whose model at the elite level, at the top end of the Champions League and the top end of the Premier League, whose ownership model is safe, is well structured, it seems to be efficient? It's ours. I don't look around at any other structure now and think I'd want that. And I think recent times I've brought that to the focus even more. So Liverpool's an extremely well-run club with individuals who, yes, have made mistakes, but by and large, they listen and they've made very, very sensible decisions that have brought Liverpool back to the absolute summit of world football. If Mo Salah wants to leave the summit of world football, then there's only one place you're going, and that's down. I noticed with some level of disappointment, this idea that was leaked out to Romano from his agent, that Salah would consider going elsewhere in the Premier League, which is obviously a kind of City threat, isn't it? A shadowy little underhand threat. I just don't want Liverpool to get involved in this. And if Liverpool have made the best offer they can make, and if their judgment is that going any further will put at risk the culture and the financial stability of the team who have got to the summit of world football, then they shouldn't do it. They should offer Mo what they can offer him. They should make it as persuasive as possible. But if he decides to move on, or his agent decides, you know, that's not going to be acceptable, then I think we should all shake hands. And I'm more and more of the point where I think, well, we'll see him out his contract. Because I'll tell you what, his final year at Liverpool... He'll probably score about 80 goals, by the way. You know, at that point...
I want Dixie's record under threat.
Well, I was going to say, he'll only have 1 year to do all those records, won't he? So he'll have to.
And we'll have paid, what, about 35, 40 million for a player that we'll have got 5 years out of, got to the top of world football. He scored all kinds of goals. You know, if Liverpool end up shaking hands at the end of that with him and holding our head up high and feeling very, very confident in that we've maintained the structure so we can... continue to be the best in world football, then I'm fine with that, because at some point in the future, Mo Salah will leave Liverpool.
Yes.
At some point, and whether that's when he's 31, 32, or whether that's when he's 35, 36, it's going to come, and Liverpool will get over that and will move forward.
I think we are in a strong position in terms of where the rest of our squad sits and all those kind of things. And this is almost like that playing out in real time. So that means that we aren't necessarily going to just acquiesce to whatever he wants. As much as it feels like the way he's playing, it seems like madness to not just do what he wants, give him whatever he wants. But that's not the way football works. It really isn't. And I have been kind of philosophical about this whole thing until recently. And the two things that made me change my mind is, one is that they appear to be markedly far apart, not just far apart. Far apart, you know, you can call, there's room for compromise, but it's markedly far apart, which says to me that this is something where not a lot has changed in the last 2 to 3 months, which does start to remind me very much of the Genie and the Emre Can situations, which would suggest that there's been some kind of consistency in how Liverpool deal with these things. The part that I'm really concerned about as well is this whole other Premier League team thing, because if that has been leaked by Salah's side, then that's a massive mistake, because that's the first thing that Mo Salah's done which would make Liverpool fans think, hang on a minute, I don't like that. I don't like what you've done there. All of the other things, even asking for money, it's like, well, you can look at what he's done. He owns this money. Like, people aren't going
to... Everyone's really sympathetic to the idea that he becomes massively the highest paid player at the club.
Yeah,
I think everyone is really sympathetic.
And if he's in those meetings saying, I want to be the highest paid player in the Premier League, I am the best player in the Premier League, Liverpool fans will be like, I get that. You can't argue with him for that. And if that is the ultimate reason why it comes apart, you can see it being potentially... I don't want to say amicable, but like a situation almost like Coutinho, where everybody feels like they're happy. Admittedly, Coutinho wasn't happy as it turned out, but he felt like he was when he left. But I don't know where we are in this, because there's still so much about this that we don't actually know. We're still speculating on.
So for me, I don't understand that one man, and I mean this Rami fella and all this, can be so out of touch with everything. And yeah, be in that position that he's in. So in a week where, you know, probably the reason why football wages are why they are, in a week where Roman Abramovich got sanctioned and essentially loses everything, and now the away team can't travel, you know, they've got to drive and stay in Airbnbs and stuff. You know, in a week where that's happened, he's doing laughing emojis at Klopp, because Klopp's, you know, answered the question and interview quite amicably as well, by the way. He hasn't answered it in a way that's a way that would trigger you. I don't think it would. I think specifically someone sort of such as that, in the midst of a title race, by the way, where we're fighting on all fronts, where Salah's adored by everyone, and then to leak the... Because let's be honest, he's leaked that to Romano, hasn't he? And he's leaked the Premier League line in there. He's done it because he's obviously in a position where he wants something to happen. He wants something to move. You know, there might be blocked, stuck in negotiation. You know, so be it.
But it's so dangerous for him, his client.
But I think on all of this, I think becoming a sense that something's not good. But the flip side of this is that it's all to different audiences. And that's the bit that we miss, because we see it solely through the lens of Liverpool supporters who love Mo Salah, I hasten to add, and think he's... In all of our, I will just sort of venture, our all of our all-time Liverpool 11s being responsible for so much brilliance at the club. But I think that that's not the audience that they're trying to, well, that he's trying to speak to. And I think that's the bit that's going to make this tricky, is that there's not just the idea, you know, for instance, I don't think you can draw a parallel on this one to the Owen one, because there was never the idea of a full-on global audience wherein there was also within that a specific sort of regional characteristic. You know, let's be clear about this. He's a hero to Egyptians, and he's a hero to the Arab world. And you can be talking to them as much as you're talking to the 3,000 people who were at Brighton yesterday.
Yeah.
In fact, you're probably talking to them more. Mm. And I think that that's why this is going to become odd, I think, from a Liverpool supporter point of view, from the idea of not just the idea of match-going supporters. By match-going supporters, I mean people who come to one game a year. Mm. From that point of view, from that huge sort of worldwide following, there's that audience, and that's a massive one, but there's also this one over here, which is about his standing elsewhere in the world. And I think that that's what's going to make this really, really complicated and might actually make it a little bit unpleasant, and that's what I'm worried about.
I get that, and you know that's spot on. But Mo Salah's a man who sort of you look at, he holds himself to the highest standards, you know, and you look at he holds himself to the highest standards, and you know everything around him. You read stuff about in his house, he's got like almost like a therapy hospital room for recovery and stuff. And all of a sudden, it feels like he's got this man around him who holds himself to the lowest of standards.
Well, to me, the conflict is Mo wants what he got yesterday from the away end. So that's where there is this conflict, where what Salah wants this is great, I love this. He couldn't have wanted it more yesterday. You know, when he scores that penalty, he points at someone in the front of the crowd. And I'm not quite sure who, but it's not like an aggressive one. It's like, this for you, this.
Yeah.
And that's why I think there is, and that will always, and this is why I think for these superstar footballers, especially Stu, who've got this regional, huge regional thing happening as well, they themselves, and I've always praised and will continue to do so, the way Salah's identity is this remarkably complex thing. But there's a massive chunk of it that is also Liverpudlian. So you've got the agent over here who's going in these other directions, but Mo Salah's a Liverpudlian. And what happens in that away end yesterday at Brighton, he wants them singing his name. He wants to know that he's absolutely adored. His name was sung. That's what we all want. And that's why, as I say, this could become weird.
It could be. And it was interesting that you brought Michael Owen into it before, because I was thinking very similar, that in terms of when you compared Michael Owen to Robbie Fowler, there was no doubt at the time who the cop loved more. And it was largely because Robbie felt like ours, whereas Michael, from the youngest age, felt like a global superstar, or he saw himself as that, as unmarketed himself as that. I'm not saying that Salah necessarily markets himself like that, but he is a genuine global star.
Much more so than Owen ever was.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he's from a different continent. He's an absolute hero there. If someone said to me that in 20 years he's the president of Egypt, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, when he was leaving a very, very different kind of regime. I wouldn't be surprised. So I think that there is that to it. What I'm worried about, though, with this, I pray that this doesn't happen, to be honest, because the agent stroke lawyer, he's such a buffoon, he's such a clown, and we have seen some evidence of that before, that we're potentially in danger of that complete breakdown that we saw with Sterling. And Sterling, there was one thing that happened with Sterling and his agents that I felt was the straw that broke the camel's back, and that was the TV interview done, I think was with the BBC, and it was a terrible interview, really, and what I felt in terms of how that reflected on the club. It just didn't sit right. It spoke of clear divisions, really, and how he saw his future going forward, which is fine, you know, it's his prerogative. But once that happened, it became very difficult, I felt, for, you know, a backward step from either side. And I'm a little bit worried that global status that Mo has, and that he does have to reach out to other audiences as well, could lead him to being persuaded by the agent to doing an interview that could lead us down a path that we can't step back from. And I almost feel like we're in the early stages of heading down that path now. There's those early shots being fired. Klopp has come out and said, listen, the club have done what they can, and the agent laughed at it.
Yeah, it's not what you want at all. I'm concerned about those things as well. I just think, going back to what you're saying about what Salah wants from us, from the crowd, what he wants is the love. It's really difficult to think about these machinations going on behind the scenes, and then to look at how he's been on the pitch in the last three or four games. He's still working as hard as he is. He's still a part of the team in team patterns. It's just the finishing. We've seen him hit the post, both posts, hit the crossbar. He's snatching the things. And then you saw his reaction to the goal. It was a penalty. He smashed it down the middle. What do we say about people when they smash it down the middle? Maybe there's a lack of confidence there. So it was getting in his head. He hadn't scored in three games. He was relieved. Everybody in the team kind of came around him. They all knew he was relieved. They all knew that it was starting to weigh on him. But what happens is, when you've got this kind of impasse, is that from the outside, we all inject our own narratives into it. So you think, oh, well, obviously he's been struggling because of all these confidence discussions.
Absolutely not. I'd be amazed if that was the case.
No.
I know you would as well.
People do that, don't they? Yeah. I'm not saying that it's true. I'm just saying that this is where the conversations start to go. And then when you throw into the whole, oh, well, he would be happy to go to Man City thing, then the next thing that happens, say he misses a couple of chances in a big game, then you start to hear the narrative in certain circles starts change and be like, and these are the things where it's like, it starts, like you said, when you get to the Sterling situation, it never starts big. It kind of bubbles and bubbles and bubbles, and then there's a big thing. And I'm like you, I want to avoid that as much as possible. But whether or not that means that he has to come out and kind of run interference between what Abbas is or isn't tweeting, I don't know, but he hasn't looked like he's going
to
do that.
No, but I also think that on this, what everyone just needs to do is just get to the end of the season, least said the better, and ideally come to an agreement on the contract. You know, that is, that's still, that all that can still happen, and hopefully will still happen, and I think it will still happen as well in general on this one. I think they'll find a way through it. All right, then, Arsenal away. They're in decent nick. I think it's slightly overstated, the form that they're in, but they are able to give sides a game. They get themselves a 0-0 at Anfield, Mo. what are you expecting from this one? The thing to point out is we're recording this before they played against Leicester, and that also means that they've got markedly less recovery than we have with a smaller squad.
Yeah, and I think until we see a team sheet of how they're going to set up against Leicester, that might answer a few questions as well, because if he's kind of holding a couple back, then maybe for that battle, then you can see how they're viewing it. But they can't afford...
Leicester's a bigger game for them, I think.
Well, I mean, this is the question. They are more competing in theory with Leicester, but because they have all these games in hand, there's lots of pressure on them to actually go out and deliver with them. So you'd look at Liverpool, who have won 8 Premier League games in a row, and think, well, yeah, it's going to be tough for us to get one of those... to get a win in that one, so then all of the other games become more important.
So we focus on the Leicester one. That's what that's what I'd hope.
Yes, but like I'm saying, until we see the team sheet of Leicester,
you're right.
I don't know that for sure. I suspect that will be the case. But also, Arsenal have come close in their minds to be or getting a result against Liverpool, and yet haven't. So they'll probably be thinking about that in kind of the same way that we were thinking about Brighton, because in the post-match, Andy Robertson mentioned Brighton as well. So I do think these kind of things do matter to players when, like, you feel like you owe someone one and you want to go out and prove it. So Arsenal themselves will want to go out and play well. But I do think this is another game whereby if we can get into a strong position early, we can control it and we can almost strangle Arsenal down, because they have got bigger and better games outside of us, I think.
What are you looking for or expecting from a team, Sean? I'm not expecting a ton of changes. I suspect it might be 2 or 3. It wouldn't surprise me if it feels like Firmino comes from nowhere and starts.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me to see Jota either, because I think, you know, as you're just saying about players and teams and stuff, I think the performance he put in the League Cup will be on everyone's mind, and particularly Arsenal defenders' mind. So it wouldn't surprise me to see Jota. I think we touched on it earlier around Naby. I think Naby plays again. I think him coming off, whether that's precaution or whatever, I think he fits in, and it possibly is Henderson that misses out. Just because I notice he has been managing his minutes a little bit more lately, and you know it's not done him any harm, so I don't see why he wouldn't do that again. I think it's probably Diaz who sort of, you know, for all the superlatives and how well he played, I think he maybe looks to manage him on Wednesday, and he goes with, you know, Jota, Mane, Salah instead, you know, and looks to bring him on from the bench. So either way, it's good that we've got these options. I think
I think you've got to keep an eye on the game after as well, the Forest game. And I fully expect in the Forest game, the front three to be Jota, Firmino and probably Salah. So I wouldn't be surprised if midweek then he just goes with the same front three. I hope he does. I can see the Firmino shout though, because he's got a history of playing great against Arsenal. So if that happened, I wouldn't be too upset.
I was thinking that you might see Firmino. I think that because he doesn't get 15-20 against Brighton, it makes it a little less likely. That's my overall sort of Firmino, where I've ended up on a Firmino position is that.
I think that it makes him more likely he comes off the bench though. I think he'll probably be involved against Arsenal because of what you say, because he's got a good record against them. I'm kind of leaning towards you, Sean. I think the whole idea of having Diaz to have that impact from the bench just for this one game, I think it might be quite tempting, because maybe because Arteta would assume that we would just keep him rolling because of how he's been playing. So it might actually make a bit of a change to their game plan. But yeah, whoever doesn't start will finish. And I think it's the same for Thiago and Henderson.
I think as well, when you look at on paper our remaining fixtures, this is one of the most challenging ones. Arsenal quietly have been developed by Arteta, or are continuing to, are still developing into one of the most exciting young teams, dynamic young teams in the league that are a long way off the finished article, but they are a threat. Players like Martinelli, you know, really dynamic. Saka, you know, Liverpool have got a long-standing interest there, and you could go on and name several others. That they are a threat, and we're going to their ground under the lights. So for me, I think Liverpool should be putting out the best 11. Go and win that game. Worry about everything else afterwards. So personally, as I said, I'd go with the same front three, and Thiago would come in probably for Henderson midfield. And I'd go with the same back four.
I agree with you about the challenge, by the way, because I think regardless of how Arteta perceives it and which to be the bigger game, whether it's Leicester or on Wednesday, you know, you can guarantee when the players get on that ground on Wednesday night, they're playing against Liverpool, it's going to be the biggest game of their however long that they're going to play.
With a scalp.
Exactly. And I think, you know, look how far they pushed City. They were really unlucky against City. I think, you know, for us, the key to our success over the last however many years has been not taking anything for granted and been really one game at a time. And I think if we can go in with that mindset on Wednesday, it'll be really important.
Okay, going to win?
Yeah.
Hope so.
any way we can. Yeah, I'll take it and just give me those 3 points.
Yeah, it's very much about the 3 points against Arsenal. Everything you need in the build-up to it on the Anfield Wrap. There'll be a team talk this week hosted by Josh Sexton. All the little bits and pieces that we normally do for you all the way through the week as well. A review looking back on that game against Brighton and everything that you need from a video point of view too. Bacon Bussy tomorrow morning, followed by the final word and all the stats, little bits and pieces and a rundown on what to expect from Arsenal too. Little headline figure. They're not very intense, Arsenal. I think we think they're more intense than they are. Lowest pressures in the country.
Really?
Yeah, lowest pressure regained, second lowest pressures. Lowest pressures is City, but they have the ball all the time.
Is that because you think that they're really hitting teams well on the counter, so they're letting teams have the ball and just waiting for the mistakes and then hitting them with the pace?
I don't know, to be honest. I had a little look at that. I think it's more that he doesn't quite have the personnel to be able to do it. So, for instance, if you look at it, where he ends up in midfield, it's been Odegaard and Xhaka with Partey through the middle of that midfield. So he sends Xhaka to the left and Odegaard to the right. And I don't think Xhaka probably thinks it suits Xhaka, but I don't think it suits Xhaka. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't suit Odegaard. And he has his fullbacks, Tierney tends to go, but the right hand one tends to stay quite close. So I think all in, they're just happy to be a little bit passive. And he hasn't got loads and loads of strength and depth either. So I think it's more that and they're managing themselves through games rather than going hell for leather. But we will see. But I think why that struck me as interesting is it's interesting to think about how when we prospered against them this season, it's often come at times where you feel like actually there hasn't been a lot of pressure on the ball.
Right.
So looking to pick those moments and going, okay, now we've got it under control and we can turn and go. And hopefully we'll see that on Wednesday. It'll be hot mic'd by the Anfield Wrap. John Gibbons is going to be doing that for you. So there'll be a hot mic on Wednesday night for that one against Arsenal. Thank you very much indeed to Mo, to Sean and to Stu. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week, covering all sorts of ground. Podcast Network.